Have you ever pulled up a winds aloft forecast, glanced at those groups of numbers and thought, yeah, that looks fine, then moved on? I'm Pattern on Traffic Pattern, right here on Radio Hangar, and today I want to slow down on one piece of your weather briefing that most students rush through. The winds aloft forecast. Because those six little digits per altitude, they can make or break your cross-country flight, and most pilots barely know how to decode them, let alone use them strategically. Shout out to our friends at aviationsoul.com, they make challenge coins for every step of the journey. Got your first solo? There's a coin for that. Private pilot? Instrument? Commercial? They've got you covered. Great way to mark the milestones that matter. aviationsoul.com. Alright, let's walk through this together. Because I remember staring at my first winds aloft report during cross-country planning and feeling like I was reading a license plate from another country. Nobody had really explained it. My instructor said check the winds and temps aloft and I nodded like I knew what I was doing. I did not know what I was doing, so let's fix that. The winds aloft forecast, formally called the FB product, is issued by the Aviation Weather Center twice a day. It gives you forecast winds and temperatures at specific altitudes for reporting stations all across the country. You'll find it when you request a standard briefing through Leidos Flight Service or through tools like 4Flight and aviationweather.gov. It's one of the core products the Airman Certification Standards expects you to understand, and your examiner on a private pilot check ride will absolutely ask you about it. Here's what the data looks like. Let's say you pull up the report for Dayton, Ohio, and you see a station identifier followed by groups like this. At 3,000 feet, you might see 2140+07, at 6,2335+01, at 9,2550-04. Those numbers aren't random. Every single group follows the same format, and once you learn it, you'll read them like a sentence. The first two digits are the wind direction in tens of degrees, so 21 means 210 degrees. That's a wind from the southwest. The next two digits are the wind speed in knots. 40 means 40 knots. And the last part, the +07 or -04, that's the temperature in Celsius at that altitude. Positive or negative. So 2140+07 means winds from 210 degrees at 40 knots, temperature 7 degrees Celsius. That's it. Direction, speed, temperature, every group, every altitude, same format. Now here's something I wish someone told me when I was training. There are two special codes you need to know, and they trip people up on check rides all the time. First, when the wind speed is less than 5 knots, they don't bother reporting a direction because light and variable winds don't really have a meaningful direction. You'll see 9900, nines in the direction spots and zeros in the speed spots. That just means light and variable, calm enough that it doesn't matter for planning. Second, and this one is more important for your safety. When winds are over 100 knots, they can't fit 3 digits into a 2-digit speed field, so they add 50 to the direction code and subtract 100 from the speed. If you see 7745, you'd subtract 50 from 77 to get the true direction of 270 degrees and add 100 to 45 to get the true speed of 145 knots. You won't see this very often at lower altitudes, but at the flight levels, absolutely. And if your examiner asks you what 7745 means, now you know. One more thing about the format. You'll notice there's no wind reported at the surface station's own altitude, for example. If the station elevation is around 1,000 feet, the 3,000-foot level is the first altitude listed. They don't report winds for altitudes within 1,500 feet of the station elevation because those winds would be too influenced by surface friction and terrain to be useful as an aloft forecast. That's a detail that shows you understand the product, not just how to read it. Okay, so you can decode the numbers now. But here's where it gets really practical. What do you actually do with this information? Let me set up a scenario. You're planning a cross-country flight from Indianapolis to Nashville. That's roughly 150 nautical miles to the southwest. You check the winds aloft and you see that at 6,000 feet, the winds are from 360 at 25 knots, due north wind at 25 knots, and you're flying south. That is a beautiful tailwind. Your ground speed is going to be significantly higher than your true airspeed. Your fuel burn for the trip drops, your time en route drops. Life is good. But now look at 9,000 feet. The winds shift to 270 at 40 knots, a strong westerly wind. If you climb to 9,000 thinking higher is better, you've just picked up a significant crosswind component that's going to push you east, of course, and reduce your effective ground speed. You'd burn more fuel correcting for the wind and gain nothing. This is altitude selection based on winds, and it is one of the most practical skills you can develop as a cross-country pilot. The examiner is looking for this kind of thinking. Not just that you can read the forecast, but that you can use it to choose a smarter altitude. Here's how I teach my students to work through it. First, determine your course heading, your general direction of flight, then look at the winds at each available altitude along your route. You're looking for the altitude where the wind has the largest tailwind component or at least the smallest headwind component. You don't need to do exact trigonometry in your head. Just think about it in terms of general agreement. If you're flying south and the wind is from the north, that's helping you. If the wind is from the east, that's a crosswind. If the wind is from the south, that's a headwind fighting you the entire way. Now, temperature matters here too, and students often ignore it. The temperature at altitude affects your true airspeed, your density altitude, and your engine performance. A warmer than standard temperature at altitude means your true airspeed will be slightly higher than what your performance charts predict for that indicated airspeed. It also means higher density altitude, which affects climb performance if you need to go higher. On a hot summer day, the temperatures aloft might tell you that 6,000 feet is already above standard by 10 degrees. That changes your fuel planning. That changes whether your normally aspirated engine is going to perform the way the POH suggests. Here's a mistake I see all the time. Students pull up the winds aloft for one station, the one closest to their departure airport, and they call it done. But on a 150-mile flight, the winds can be completely different at the midpoint and at the destination. You should check at least two or three stations along your route. If the winds at Indianapolis show a tailwind, but the winds at Bowling Green show a strong headwind, you know you're going to lose that advantage partway through the flight. Your fuel planning needs to account for that. Don't just average it out in your head. Actually look at each station and think about what your ground speed will be for each leg of the trip. And that connects to something bigger about weather briefings in general. No single product tells the whole story. The winds aloft tell you about wind and temperature at altitude, but they don't tell you about turbulence. They don't tell you about icing. They don't tell you about cloud layers. You need to combine the winds aloft with the ATs at your destination, with the area forecast, with any airmits or sigmits along your route. The winds aloft are one piece of the puzzle, but they're a piece that directly affects your fuel burn, your time en route, and your route of flight. That makes them critical for planning. Let me give you one more practical tip. When you're looking at the winds aloft and you see a dramatic wind shift between altitudes, pay attention. If the winds at 6,000 are from the south at 15 knots and the winds at 9,000 are from the west at 45 knots, that's called wind shear. A significant change in wind speed or direction over a relatively short vertical distance, that kind of shear can mean turbulence. It doesn't always mean turbulence, but it's a signal to check pilot reports, check the airmits for turbulence, and think about whether that ride at 9,000 is going to be comfortable or whether you want to stay lower. The winds aloft forecast is valid for specific time periods, the ones issued in the morning cover the afternoon, the ones issued in the evening cover the next morning. Make sure you're looking at the forecast that covers your actual time of flight. If you're flying tomorrow afternoon but you're looking at tonight's forecast that covers tomorrow morning, you might be working with outdated information. This is another detail that separates a student who checks the box from a pilot who actually understands the briefing. Let me bring this home with what I want you to take away. Next time you sit down to plan across country, don't just glance at the winds aloft. Decode every group at every altitude along your route. Write down the direction and speed. Think about which altitude gives you the best wind advantage. Check the temperatures to make sure your performance planning is realistic. Look for wind shear between altitudes and compare at least two or three stations along your route. That process takes maybe 5 extra minutes, 5 minutes that could save you fuel, save you time, and keep you out of an uncomfortable ride at the wrong altitude. That's the kind of preparation that makes you not just a student who passed a test, but a pilot who makes smart decisions. Most of what I covered today comes straight out of the Aviation Weather Service's Advisory Circular, AC0045H, along with the FAA's Pilot's Handbook of Aeronautical Knowledge. Both worth reading if you want to go deeper. You can find more at radiohangar.com. I'm Pattern. Go decode some winds. I'll see you next time.